Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Mike, let's go.
It's yours.
Whose world is this?
It's your world, Joe.
It's mine. Whose world is this?
It's your world, Joe.
It's mine. Whose world is this?
It's your world, Joe.
It's mine. Whose world is this?
It's your world, Joe.
That's true. Joe Ostrowski covers baseball for us here at The Score. Wrote a column about John Lester that we'll get to momentarily. He is one of the hosts of Hit and Run along with Barry Rosner. You can hear that show Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. And the host of the Early Odds podcast, which is a great listen as well. This hour being brought to you by Shelton Fireworks, home of the big ones. And now Joe Ostrowski joins me on The Score. What's up, Joe?
What, no Danity Kane tonight?
No Danity Kane for you. Sorry about that. What are the odds on LeBron coming to the Bulls? Have you seen anything, heard anything? Zero?
But you know what is a little shocking over the last couple of days? All of a sudden, it's kind of gone underreported. Some people have noticed it. All of a sudden, all the offshore sites have the Lakers as a huge favorite. Like, so big of a favorite that if you bet $100 on LeBron going to the Lakers, you win $36.
Is that because of the Gary Payton reporting about LeBron's kids are enrolled in school?
It could be a little of that, a couple of mansions out there, Magic Johnson having a role. It's just probably what the NBA would really like to see happen, too. That's a little bit of it, but it'll change. I'm sure there will be some buzz at some point in the offseason about the Sixers, and it'll bounce around.
Yeah, well, I mean, we got 2 weeks of this nonsense, and then hopefully LeBron will make a decision, and maybe it's just him saying, I'll play one more year in Cleveland and see what the deal is. But that's not why I called you. I wanted to talk about the Cubs. Let's start with your piece on John Lester. Considering the money that he signed for, and clearly it's already paid dividends with the Cubs winning the World Series, do we undervalue how good Lester is and has been?
Yeah, there's no question we undervalue what Lester is and has been. Now, a few years ago when he came here and signed that $155 million contract, we would have said, oh, if you get a ring out of it, who cares? Oh, the back half of it's going to be ugly? Who cares? Lawrence, he's the ace. There's no question about it. You don't worry when John Lester's taking the ball at all. You know what kind of effort he's going to give you. And we're on the back end of that contract. And he's ERA in the low twos. Now, some of the peripherals get scary. He has an xFIP in the fours. There are some other numbers, like his strand rate is actually pretty high, which you expect to regress to the mean a little bit at some point this season. But the results that he's getting are really on par when John Lester was in his prime. When he was in his 20s with the Red Sox, he's had 13 starts this season, and in four of them, he has allowed two hits or fewer, which already matches the most he's ever had in a season. It's unbelievable. And his health, I think, is one of his biggest strengths. And something you know about Lester, he's going to be out there 30 to 32 times every single season. So he's probably going to hit that two hit or fewer mark again this season and have the most starts that's happened in a year for him. So, yeah, we spend so much time talking about the back end of this rotation and what's going on with Chatwood and Darvish, and can we get more of this Quintana moving forward? Lester's out there. There are no concerns, and that guy's 34 years old.
Yeah, it's amazing that there is a level of comfort that comes with him being on the bump, that you're not even really worried about some of the fielding stuff and the yips, and they've figured out, like, just throw it in the ground and We got the guys that'll be able to catch the ball, and it looks weird, but it's been effective so far.
Yeah, and you know, some of those peripherals, I'm going to buy into that. I think his numbers will certainly bump up a little bit at some point this season. But another part of this is the defense. And early on, there were some struggles, some inconsistencies with this defense. And we don't talk about the defense much lately. Why? Because they're picking up the baseball. They're doing what they're supposed to do. So maybe the numbers won't go as high. Because remember how crazy it was in 2016? It was because the defense was playing at an all-time level. So because of what he has behind him, maybe it won't jump up to an ERA in the fours. Maybe it will sit in the low threes much of the season.
Let's talk about this series that they had with the Brewers. What was your thoughts on Cubs-Brewers and the Brewers getting two out of three and the Cubs not hitting over the last two games?
The three-game series was very, very close to Milwaukee's sweep. And coming in, it was, oh, look, the Cubs just absolutely dominate the Brewers. Look at them, look at them. And actually, if you go over all of the games, they're playing pretty close. I mean, you had 4 one-run games so far this season, and that's not counting the first game of the series, where Jason Hayward gets a hit off the best lefty in baseball, arguably the best reliever in all of baseball, in Hader to tie the game, and the amount of hits that he's come through lately. I mean, it just really shows you that even though the Cubs have a major edge as far as the season series goes, these teams are not far apart at all. And there are some aspects of the game where Milwaukee does have an advantage. People here don't want to admit it, but they know how to shorten a game. They can. They don't need a lot out of their starters. The Cubs need a little bit more out of the starting rotation. I'm not saying the Cubs' bullpen's a problem. It isn't. The thing is, the Brewers' bullpen is just elite, and we know that that lineup has some hitters. And the Cubs do too, but the Cubs go really cold sometimes, and we saw it this week. Even when they were beating Pittsburgh, they weren't scoring a ton of runs when they were doing it.
Well, what do you think you know about this team? Because now we've passed that 60-game threshold, which is usually where baseball people feel comfortable. They know what their team is. What do you think you know about the Cubs?
Yeah, offensively, I don't think we've learned anything. I don't think there's anything different. It really seems to be the same old Cubs. And I mentioned that they're a streaky offense, and they have a lot of players that will go red hot. And they will also go ice cold for an extended period of time. And that is my biggest concern offensively with this club, because that's what's going to get you out of the playoffs really quick. It can take a short series, and then you're out of there. We have that sample size where you think you know what you have, but do we? Do we know what we have in the starting rotation? I don't think you do. You have half of a rotation. You're pretty sure about half of it. The bullpen looks fantastic, but it's a tax bullpen because of the starting rotation. It all ties in together. So how are they going to find rest for Steve Cishek throughout much of the rest of the season? We don't know what Yu Darvish is this year. I do think there's a chance that Darvish can outperform Jake Arrieta for this first season of that contract, but we don't know. And Jim Hickey said this morning on The Score that he would be a little surprised if he's not back before the All-Star break. I don't think they're going to push him. He'll come back after the All-Star break. That's my expectation. And you get to your third starter, and the difference in stacking up this rotation versus other ones in the National League, you were supposed to be deeper than other teams. And we don't know what they are once you get to starters 3 and 4. That can be a big issue.
Well, the good thing at least is that Quintana, at least over his last three starts, looks like the guy that a lot of people think he is and his numbers say he is, which is good.
Yeah, I would certainly agree with that. That's another guy. We don't say Jose Quintana unless he's pitching poorly, right? Unless he's getting rocked by the Atlanta Braves.
Right.
Just goes out there, does his job, but we only bring him up when he has one of those games where he's getting crushed, and early on this season we saw opposing teams are hitting the ball hard on Quintana. So if you're solid with Quintana at three, okay. But what are you doing the rest of the season? What are you doing with your four? And I guess it's really about the four, because whoever your fourth starter is, which will be Yu Darvish, will be in the postseason. But are you going to be at a point later in the year where you trust handing the ball to Yu Darvish?
I don't know. And honestly, like I know that they're saying, oh, well, you know, it's anytime that I see guys that are struggling with forearm stuff, I'm like, that's questionable. And
because it's really close to the elbow, are you saying?
Yes.
Yeah.
That whenever I see that, I get concerned. I get real worried about that. The Chatwood thing is fascinating, because whatever fix you're going to have for him, I don't know if they'll see any benefits of it in the 2018 season.
You're saying you think there's a lot more to work on, he won't be able to get it fixed, or because he's not going to be in your playoff rotation no matter what?
I think that it's almost like you almost have to break some of this stuff down, because we're talking about noisy hands when he's out there on the mound and him trusting some of the stuff. I feel like they got their eyes on it in real situations, you know, not what they scouted necessarily, but what he is now. And it's going to take some time that they don't necessarily have in a season where you've already got a significant injury in your rotation that you need to cover innings with.
Well, he's worse than what he was in Colorado.
Way worse.
We were all sold on what he did on the road. Oh, that means it's going to be like he was always on the road, because he's going to be pitching a lot of games at Wrigley Field. And no, it's not working out like that. The high walk rate for Chatwood is not a surprise. And they were hoping, okay, that's something that we can fix. That's something that we can work on. I mean,
yeah,
he had one of the highest walk rates in all of baseball last season.
Yes, but it was 77 walks in 25 starts. And he's at, what, 58 walks in 13 starts now?
Lawrence, the walk rate is double.
It's amazing.
It was high last year. I think it was the highest or top three in all of baseball, and now it's double. It went from 10% going into yesterday's start. It was 20%. And then we walk away from five innings, three earned runs, headline, only two walks for Chatwood. That's where the bar is right now. That's how poorly he has pitched for you right now. And we said we know what we're getting in Lester. And I think for the most part with Hendricks, it's the same situation. And I know he's the fifth starter, but you have no idea what's going to happen anytime Chatwood is taking the bump.
Were you screaming at the TV in the ninth wondering where Chris Bryant was?
Yeah. You know, I'm literally dreading at 5 tomorrow morning, because Dustin is going to be screaming.
I mean, he's right. There's no reason to not pinch hit Chris Bryant. Unless he's hurt.
I don't have an argument. Like, what do you say? So here's the thing. And we were talking, well, this stood out to me. Like, you go back to Friday, and he puts him in the leadoff spot, and it's kind of underreported because it was going into the weekend, and Bryant hits leadoff in back-to-back days. Okay, interesting. Joe does that. He's trying to get him motivated, take a different approach at the plate. We've been talking about a hit and run for weeks. Not try to hit a home run every time you're at the plate, because that's what we've seen a lot out of Chris Bryant, and it's been a full month since he's actually hit a home run, as the power numbers have just taken a nosedive. He has one extra base hit this month, so he's got all singles for the most part. With what you've seen, with the power numbers going down, doesn't it scream injury?
You would think.
With Chris Bryant, with this guy, with the history that you have, he's not an Anthony Rizzo where you know he's going to have a month where he is dreadful at the plate. That happens just about every April with Anthony Rizzo, but we know he's going to turn around. We were just waiting, and it happened, right? We don't see this with Chris Bryant usually. And when we've seen struggles, we find out later, well, there was a risk thing going on. There was usually something going on. So that's been my concern. Is he hiding something? Because I don't think they're going to trot him out there every single day if he isn't 100% healthy, not in games in May and June. So it's definitely a major concern. We know how many hitters this team has and how deep the lineup is, but you remove that guy, and all of a sudden it's a very, very different look.
Joe, I appreciate the time. Thanks for joining me. I'm looking forward to hit and run this weekend as well. And what do you got on early odds? What's the next thing?
Well, we've got the U.S. Open starting in a matter of hours. So I brought on four great guests. The latest pod is up now. It was put up yesterday. Getting some great feedback. So before the U.S. Open kicks off tomorrow morning, you should definitely take a listen to that. Four great guests. I just got out of the way, and it's some great information. It should be an entertaining 4 days at Shinnecock Hills.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
We'll talk with Joe next week. Always good content from him. Check out Hit and Run on Sundays. He and Barry, those guys have great chemistry together. It's a fantastic show. The segment being brought to you by Spot Hero. And finally, here's a way you can save time parking. Use Spot Hero anytime you park. First-time users can enter promo code SMART for $10 off. Spot Hero, park smarter. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk with Robert Klimko of Sports Illustrated, the Monday morning quarterback. He raised an interesting point on how quarterbacks are being developed at the youth level. I think you should listen to the conversation. We'll have it next for you here on The Score. If you need legal advice by a reputable attorney, send questions you want answered to WBBMNewsRadio.com/legal advice or look online for free Legal Fridays with Horowitz, Horowitz & Associates. That's WBBMNewsRadio.com/legal advice. By the way, thanks to everyone who has taking a listen to my podcast, the House of L podcast. I really appreciate the support. It's like 15,000 downloads already. I mean, that's just what I'm seeing from Libsyn. iTunes doesn't give you numbers. So thank you for the support. Part two of the interview with Jason is available. If you did not get a chance to listen to it, the name of the podcast is called House of L. You can search it on iTunes. You can download it. It's in my bio on Twitter. It's a lot of fun. We talk with a lot of interesting media people and get their perspective on stuff. So the interview with Jason is illuminating and hurtful and gut-wrenching. And if you love Jay, you'll love the interview and you'll feel for him. So check it out. And again, thank you for the support. Seeing that people are listening to the podcast in Thailand and Costa Rica is pretty doggone dope. I ran across a thread this morning on Twitter from Robert Klimko, who I follow. He's a really good football writer. Interesting dude. In fact, I was in New Orleans last week. It was raining, so I'm just sitting there watching him on MSNBC talk about the NFL and the anthem, and it was great. But seeing him talk football today, I thought you might get something out of the conversation in case you didn't see it on Twitter. So I wanted to invite him onto the show, and you can follow Robert on Twitter at Robert Klimko, spelled K-L-E-M-K-O. He joins me now here on The Score. What's up, Robert?
I'm doing well, man. How are you?
I'm doing really well, man. It's good to see you continuing to shine and out there doing it on a national level and getting people's minds right on certain issues. It's it's fun to see that. Also, I'm enjoying that you're letting the genuine baby hair grow out a little bit, too.
My friends are calling me Fat Russell Wilson, so.
No, man. I wouldn't. No, no. I'm envious. I wish I could grow my hair out again, but that ship has sailed, sir. And so I like to see when light skinned bros are out there doing it big like we can. I like to show some love that way for sure.
I appreciate the support.
All right, let's talk about this Christian Hackenberg thing. For people who don't know, and you wrote the story 3 years ago about like the way quarterbacks are built, and you were using Goff and Hackenberg and a couple other guys as an example, the mechanism now with which quarterbacks are being built up from youth football to the NFL, what is it?
Yeah. So I think one thing when you notice when you cover the league is that quarterback is a really exclusive position in terms of demographic and socioeconomic. So we wanted to see, we looked at every quarterback in the 2016 draft, actually. I think it was 14 or 15 guys that ended up getting drafted, and wanted to look into their backgrounds to see what they all had in common. And what they all ended up having in common is you know, they came from two-parent homes, college-educated parents, upper-middle-class to upper-class backgrounds. You know, we determined that by looking up the median home values of their state compared to the homes that they actually grew up in. Access to individual coaching and instruction, which has become, you know, as you know, a cottage industry with all of these names popping up as quarterback gurus and guys who can charge crazy amounts of money to families with kids who are aspiring quarterbacks. And I think Hackenberg's career is kind of a good example of the pitfalls of this really narrow path that exists towards becoming an NFL quarterback, because Christian's dad spent thousands of dollars flying him across the country to meet with various QB gurus that helped him get recruited, that helped him thrive at the high school level and early on in college. And then you saw him regress in college. And I think that, and basically what I tweeted was that having access to resources and having money has become so much more important in terms of becoming a successful college and NFL quarterback than, you know, the things that are actually important when you get to the highest level of quarterbacking, which is, you know, the processing speed and mental acuity and composure and calm under pressure. And so you see a lot of these guys kind of flame out, and then we complain about, you know, young quarterbacks in the NFL not seeming to get it and never seeming to pan out. And I think part of the reason for that is that we have a small talent pool from which to choose from.
So are we seeing, if you're a kid that's in the poorer suburbs of Chicago or playing in CPS, and maybe your family can't afford to send you to a quarterback guru, are we seeing you being kind of priced out of the position?
Well, yeah, and it's not only that. It's in a lot of inner city places and rural places, it's coaches that don't have any experience coaching quarterbacks. So, you know, you put the best athlete in that position, and he's essentially a glorified running back who throws the ball 10 times a game. You know, maybe that kid, under the right circumstances with the right coaches and parents who could take him to all these different 7-on-7 events and all-star camps and meet with QB gurus that are going to go over his mechanics, maybe that kid was actually a better candidate to be an NFL quarterback than a Christian Hackenberg. But we'll never know, because he's not going to get a scholarship offer. He's not going to get the proper experience. And, you know, he's going to play wide receiver at the next level or running back.
That's what I was wondering, if those kids end up getting moved off of the position because they can't afford it. When I was going back over your piece and going through the conversation via Twitter, I kept thinking about the Real Sports piece that they did on youth sports and how it has turned into a multi-million dollar industry where you have parents, you know, putting their kids on travel teams and looking at it as, well, here's an opportunity to get my kid a college scholarship or maybe get them to the pros. And I got a little bit sad about it, because it feels as if you're a kid that does have some talent and you do need, like, can you get sufficient enough coaching that if you have extreme talent, you might be in the same boat as some of these guys who can pay for the help that they're getting?
Yeah, you know, I think it's luck of the draw in a lot of cases, because, you know, guys like Jameis Winston, and to use an example from my story, Cardale Jones ended up at high school programs where, the kids around them weren't wealthy. They didn't come from wealthy backgrounds, but they had tremendously experienced and capable high school offensive coaches. So for a lot of the kids that do make it out of Purdy to the NFL, that's often the case. They met somebody who, you know, was a guru at their high school. It's hard for me to sit here and begrudge parents paying a lot of money for their kids to meet, you know, these QB coaches and to learn more. You know, maybe that was a really fun time for Christian Hackenberg, and I'm sure now that he's pocketed however many million dollars he's made in the NFL, he's not blaming his dad, right? He's happy with the way that his life has gone. You know, obviously he'd like to compete, but you know, I think that the solution for this is for entities like the NFL and, you know, the NBA and Major League Baseball to say, you know, we need to create programs in, you know, some of our cities where the most of our talent's coming from and a lot of underprivileged places, and say, connect some of these youth programs and high school programs that are underprivileged with better coaching.
I wonder, too, if you're Hackenberg, and you're right, we don't know that this hasn't been the time of his life, getting to this point and getting drafted high and making it to the NFL, even though you're not playing at the NFL level, have been great. We don't know that that's not the case. But I wonder if the actual ability of the player gets stunted and maybe that person gets cheated because of the other experiences that one could have without specializing so early on.
Yeah. Well, most of these guys who make it to the NFL as quarterbacks or at any position played multiple high school sports. So it's not as though football has become this year-round thing. I think all 32 first-round picks played multiple high school sports. But the thing is, in the summers, and say whether it's during the winter or the spring when you're not playing a sport, it's about having a parent or a person in your life who can take off work and make sure that you're getting to these Elite 11 camps and make sure that you're getting to these opportunities to play 7-on-7 football and things like that. Having that person invest in you often makes people work harder and often makes people invest in themselves and their own careers. And I think quarterback is unique because you can make it in college football. You can make it in the NFL as a defensive tackle or a wide receiver. You're going to get coached up, and you don't have to do all this stuff on the side. But quarterback, it's like playing the violin now, you know. You have to have the training. You have to have the extra work.
It's a fascinating discussion, and I'm so glad that we're having it because, you know, there's a parent right now that's weighing the options of whether or not it's worth it for their family to invest this way in their student. What would you advise them on how to go about finding the right fit with one of these guys, and what's worth it and what's not?
Yeah. Well, when I was writing the story, I talked to Bruce Feldman, who covers college football and has wrote several awesome books. I can't remember the name of his quarterback centric book. But if you just Google Bruce Feldman quarterback, you should pick it up. He talked about how a lot of these cases that he's kind of followed in recruiting, where kids were highly recruited and they traveled across the country at all these camps and QB gurus, in a lot of cases were burnt out by the time they got to the next level or by the time it came time to kind of turn it on and try to make it to the NFL. And so his advice was, you know, just to go at your kid's pace. You know, if he wants to spend the summer goofing off or playing travel baseball instead of football or whatever, you know, that's got to be his prerogative. It's got to be the kid pushing you to spend this kind of money on the training, if you got it, you know, if you have the money, as opposed to you pushing the kid.
Robert Klimko of Sports Illustrated joining me for a few minutes here on The Score. Follow him on Twitter at Robert Klimko. This has nothing to do with your piece whatsoever, but you do cover the NFL. And I was thinking about this the other day. The way that we talk about NFL players during this dead period before training camp, I wonder if we need to reassess that. And the way we talk about it is, oh no, I hope the coaches have got these guys in line because these next 6 weeks, no one's going to be looking after them. We don't say that about any other athlete. We don't say that about baseball players when they leave for the winter. We don't say that about NBA players during the summer. But we do say that about NFL players for the next 6 weeks. I know some of it is justified, but some of it is not. And I kept thinking to myself, at some point I want to talk about this on the air. And I figured you might be someone I could get some sort of historic perspective on with this.
Yeah. Well, I think there's three kinds of NFL players this time of year. There's the guys you don't have to worry about. And, like, that's the vast majority of the league. I would say that's, like, 70% of the league. Like, they're going to go get their work done. Maybe they don't come in and pass their conditioning test on the first day, but they're gonna pass it on the second day of training camp. Like, those guys are rock solid. You're not worried about them. The agents aren't checking up on them all the time. Then the other 30% is split into two groups. There's the guys who already got drug tested, already got their marijuana test out of the way here in the first few weeks of the year. In a lot of circles, they call that test the golden ticket because that means you can smoke for the rest of the year and you're not going to be tested again for marijuana. And those guys are kind of in the clear too. Like, you don't have to worry so much about them. And then the third group is the guys that don't have the golden ticket yet. And they're, you know, they're sitting there itching and trying to stay out of trouble and trying to stay away from, you know, some of the guys from home who are bad influences. And you got to check up on those guys. You know, I know that we don't talk about other athletes like this, but, you know, I think the NFL probably has more discipline issues and drug testing issues and positive tests around, you know, training camp, come training camp time of year, than most of the other leagues. You know, so I think some of that is a little bit justified. I know personally agents who travel a lot this time of year just to check up on guys. You know, they're back and forth between Miami and Los Angeles making sure their guys are good.
That makes a lot of sense. What are people around the league telling you about Matt Nagy?
People are excited about him. You know, I think there's a natural excitement regionally about every head coach or almost every head coaching hire that happens, you know, every winter. And then there's gonna be a natural level of hype. But Matt Nagy as a play caller has been celebrated in this league for a long time and was kind of felt like as one of those best-kept secrets before he got a head coaching job. So, you know, I don't know what he's going to be like in terms of managing a football team and all the extra things that you have to do as a head coach that have nothing to do with X's and O's. But in terms of just offensive football, I mean, I don't think it gets better.
Okay, well, good. And that should keep people happy. What's the most important story between now and training camp around the league?
Around the league? Man, the holdouts are big. You'd like to see the Rams get Aaron Donald done, the Seahawks with Earl Thomas. I have a sense those deals will get done. But, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if there was a high-profile holdout going into training camp. I mean, that'll be the biggest story in my mind. You know, some of the quarterback competitions are fascinating. You hear in Buffalo that Nathan Peterman, it might beat out A.J. McCarron for the job there, at least to start while Josh Allen gets ready. Lamar Jackson and Joe Flacco, they're talking about them being in the same formation at times. I don't know how that works, but those QB battles would be fun to watch early.
Am I crazy that the optic of Andrew Luck throwing a non-regulation football was a little weird? Like, if he wasn't ready to throw the actual NFL ball, why have him throwing anything?
Look, you can't plan your practice around like what the media is going to be able to film. You know, if Andrew wants to get out there and throw a K-12 football, then, you know, good for him. Good for Andrew.
Robert, thanks so much for the time, man. I truly appreciate it. Great work as always, and keep doing what you're doing.
All right, thanks. Thanks for having me.
It's Robert Klemko, Sports Illustrated. Now listen, if you're a parent and you heard our conversation about specializations specifically at the quarterback position, I'd love to know what it's like for you. I'd love to know if you feel pressure, if your son, or I guess your daughter, if you're playing flag, has to do some of this. And I know the specialization that goes on with sports in general for parents is difficult. You know, my extended family, on my wife's side of the family, we got a couple of really good athletes. And you hear that they're playing year-round and they're playing travel. And it's like, I get it. I'm old and things have changed. But I feel like if you have enough talent, shouldn't you be able to forego some of this? Or is this just how it is now? Like, I always wonder, because I end up calling a lot of college basketball, and you hear about, well, this kid was on this AAU team and blah, 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 blah. And I kept wondering, where will they get the best coaching? I'm not saying that you can't get good coaching from AAU coaches, because there are a lot of great ones that are around. There are a lot of bad high school coaches around. I know that there were some people at Mount Carmel when everything went down with Frank Lindsay were upset because they felt like the style of play that the Caravan was running was antiquated and felt like it didn't give their son an opportunity to shine and make it to that next level. So I don't have any kids, and I definitely don't have any high school age kids I know of. No, I don't. One maybe in college, but that's another story for another day. But if you're a football parent, or you can lend me your experience as a parent of an athlete who's specializing, I would love to talk to you about this, about how much money you're spending, how much time you're spending, how appropriate any of this stuff is, and tell me the good and the bad of it. 312-644-6767 is the number. I look forward to your input on this subject. My name is Lawrence Holmes. You're listening to The Score. Glad that you're hanging out. Lawrence Holmes here with you until 10 o'clock. No guests of the 9, so it's just us talking about all sorts of stuff, whether it's the Cubs or LeBron or the Bulls or the conversation we just had with Robert Klimko, and we were talking about all the specialization at the quarterback position and how early it starts. And he was talking about the economic ramifications and how you might have kids from lower middle class or lower class families being priced out of playing quarterback. Think about that. We look at sports as the ultimate meritocracy. And now you may have an issue where it is like tennis or like golf, where you see someone that has enough talent to warrant you spending some money, and maybe it ends up benefiting at the end of the road. I'd love to know what your experience has been, whether it's specifically training a quarterback or wanting to push your son to play that position, or youth sports in general. Some good text messages have come in via the text line. 670-11 is the way that you can do that. You can also call us at 312-644-6767. Vernon Hills and Keith. Hey, Keith, you're on The Score.
Lawrence, you rock. Let me just first say this. I know you got your TV gig on the side, and if that works out for you, fantastic. But I am always wishing and hoping for you to get an additional time slot here on The Score, whether it's either one of the drives or even midday. You deserve it. So you got a fan here, at least one.
I appreciate it, but I mean, I can do what I need to do on my show, and now I have a podcast called House of L, which you should check out if you haven't checked it out yet.
I definitely will. So about a year ago, a job change forced me, or gave me the opportunity, to move suburbs. So I went north here to Vernon Hills, and one of the deciding factors was the ability for my twin boys, who were entering high school, to play multiple sports. We were getting a lot of pressure at the old high school, which is a much bigger one, to focus on one sport or the other. And I've always been in the mindset, maybe I am old school as well, where they should have the opportunity to play as many sports for as long as they can until they want to make the decision to say, I want to be in this sport or that sport. That said, their week this week includes, in the beginning of the day, 8 o'clock in the morning, they're doing weightlifting and general training, endurance training for football, okay? When they're done with that, then they've got football practice where they're already in half pads and running patterns and whatnot. Then they move to a basketball camp where they are again, fine-tuning their skills for the fall/winter already now. Then they move to a baseball game, which thankfully today was a home game at the high school where they played. Then tonight they had another baseball practice for their travel team.
Wow.
Ka-ching, ka-ching. And now I'm actually picking them up from driver's education because they're that age. But I think the story here is twofold. you want to give your kids as much opportunity as they can for as long as they can. I tell them the second they drop out of a sport, you're going to wake up and you're going to be 40 years old. And you're going to regret that you ever did that until they have to make that decision where they must drop out of that sport. But then the flip side of that is giving that to your children is, A, they're super tired and they're being worn out and maybe they're not giving their best in any one sport. But B, mom and dad are footing the bill for all this, for AAU and travel baseball. Thank God there's no travel football just yet, but there's 7-on-7 that they've got to do as well. So we're in a conundrum. We want them to get as much as they can out of their high school years, but it's killing them time-wise and it's killing us financially, right? And I think the whole specialization and the need for them to have to go to an AAU program just to keep up or to go to travel baseball just to keep up, it's nothing that I grew up with, and it's, again, we're going to put them in that situation because that's something that they want. But, boy, it's tough on them, and it is tough on us as well.
Meanwhile, that Vernon Hills football program is really, really good.
It's getting there, absolutely. So they do okay for the size of the school. But, again, it's not without its costs on both ends.
I appreciate the feedback. Thanks, Keith, for checking in. 312-644-6767 is the number. Let's go out to Carrie and talk with Matt. Hey, Matt, you're on the Score.
Hey, Lawrence, how are you? Great to talk to you.
Same here. What's on your mind?
Yeah, so I'm kind of on the opposite of the spectrum. I actually lived through this, so I kind of consider myself a pioneer with the whole travel baseball thing. I was born in 81, so I played Park District baseball for, you know, the first 9 years of my life. And then they had an all-star tournament, like, every year, and, you know, I got recruited by a travel team. And back then, travel ball in 92, 93 was, like, unheard of. I didn't even know what it was.
It was for the elite of the elite players in your area.
Thank you for saying that, because it was literally handpicked one or two kids from every town, city, around the surrounding area. And shout-out to my old team. They're still around. They're still doing well. Northwest Travelers. They're based out of Palatine. But back then, I didn't come from a wealthy family, so I know for a fact that my father, he worked for the railroad, and he basically sacrificed a lot for me to get that opportunity, because playing, let's just say, Park District baseball when you're a little bit, you know, more athletic or, you know, have more skills than, you know, the average kid at that age, it was almost...
too easy.
I wasn't getting much out of it.
Yeah.
So when I started playing travel ball, it was, my dad gave me a choice. It wasn't like, hey, you have to play this. It was, do you want to play this? It's going to go from 15 games a summer to 70 to 80 with traveling around the country, you know, going to Omaha, doing all this. And I'm going to tell you right now, back then, it wasn't everyone gets a chance because they want to play travel ball. It was literally, you were the best of the best. And I'm not calling to brag. It's just travel ball has definitely changed since I was a little 11-year-old kid. That's all I kind of wanted to say.
No, I mean, I remember at that point, I'm playing Babe Ruth League. And even it was weird even back then where, you know, it's, at HF, it's weird because the two cities have their own team. So I was playing for Homewood. So you play with your high school teammates who live in Flossmoor, right? And you're traveling around the South Burbs. And the guys that we knew were really, really good, they would maybe be on the team, but they would also be gone sometimes. So you knew, like, the great players were playing travel ball. Mike, did you go through any of this stuff when you were a kid? Because, I mean, you were obviously a pretty good baseball player.
Not to the degree that the kids go to now. You know, we did what you were talking about. We played in the house leagues, and then you play in the local travel league, and then occasionally you go out to camp somewhere. Like, I went to Mickey Owens' camp a few times. I went to – he has one in Arizona. He has one in Mississippi. So I went to those. But aside from that, I mean, back then in, you know, the mid to late 90s, the travel ball was nowhere near what they have now. I mean, they play, like you said, year round now. There was nothing even close to that back then.
Go ahead.
And also, Lawrence, when I played like, you play your regular league, you get to All Stars, and then at the end, they do travel. Now, my nephew graduated high school, what, like 4 or 5 years ago? He played a thing where it's like $600, you're going to play travel the whole year. I'm like, that doesn't make sense. It doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel like it's like you're earning your spot. It seems like the money is the thing that's getting you there, even though he was a good player.
Can you buy a scholarship? Is actually what one of the texters is talking about. If you'd like to jump in on the conversation, 312-644-6767 is the number. By the way, just on another note, I got the itch today. Like I got the itch. So listen, here's what I want to do. If there's a 35 or 30 and up league somewhere where you would let me come out and shag fly balls and maybe hit a little bit in pregame in the city or the near suburbs, I would love to do it. I got to find a glove, though, because I donated my fielder's mitt. Got my catcher's mitt still, but my fielder's one.
Your man Ozzie Jr.'s got a league.
Oh, Lord, I can't with him. I can't. Although he just had a baby. Shout out to him for having a kid. I can't. I can't do that with him. I can't. Oh, maybe I can. We'll
I played
see.
In that. I played in that league a couple years ago.
And how'd you feel about it? Did you dominate, Mike?
I didn't dominate. My knees, obviously, they don't work like they used to. I played well. I hit about 300. Played about 30 games. Drove in about 35 runs. Scored about 25 times.
Really, what I want to do is just go out and throw, and hit. Like get like 20 swings in. That's all I want to do. And then we'll see if it progresses from there.
Hey, Lawrence, I got a league out in Manuka. You can come and join.
I would go out to Manuka.
No, you wouldn't.
Yes, I would.
That, you know how far that is, man?
The Manuka High School people donated some baseball gear and softball gear, and I was able to get that to – it went stretched so far that we were able to start a little league on the northwest side, and the softball team at one of the schools in Gary was able to benefit from it. So shout out to Manuka. I would definitely go out there and shag some fly balls on a Saturday afternoon or something, I think. This segment being brought to you by Tomorrow Sleep, a new Tomorrow hybrid mattress designed by sleep experts at Serta Simmons. Visit GetTomorrowSleep.com. Use code TRAFFIC4 for $125 off when you spend $500 or more. We'll keep talking about this with you parents next here on The Score.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode. And catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.